In yesterday's lecture, that we explained that in order to raise the child well, that we should not, instead of beating, we should have love and affection. Maar nahi pyar, don't hit, but give love and affection. Because by beating a child, you will never be able to rectify their mistake. Now the child will just learn to hide their mistakes. And they will keep hiding and concealing their mistakes from their parents. He will adopt a public personality in front of them, but he will privately continue doing whatever he wants to do. So when you punish... when you punish the child physically, he doesn't become better, he becomes more careful. It will control the misbehavior, but it cannot reduce the desire to misbehave. And he will want to misbehave. So that means he hasn't really been changed. Then, those children who were beat by their parents, they are less interested in their schooling, then they will get lower grades. And this is the way they will react. So they can't misbehave at home, so they'll misbehave at school, which will result in them underperforming. And they won't take their heart's interest in the work of the household. They will only do any household work if you force them, but they won't like to do it if you beat them. Then some bad habits will also be ingrained. They will see bad dreams, they will have nightmares, they may start wetting their bed, urinating in their bed, they may have find it difficulty to go to sleep, they may find depression, headache. All of these things happen because of beating the child. Sayyidina Rasulullah used to train us to raise the children with love. But today's topic is how to do the education and knowledge training of the child. A child starts learning at a very early age and will begin learning, continue learning all the way until they die. And in the teachings of Sayyidina Rasulullah, the Prophet said that you should seek knowledge from the cradle to the grave. So to learn is the basic need of a child. In 1959, there was a resolution passed in the United Nations which declared that every child has a basic right to education. And you should reflect that Sayyidina Rasulullah said this 1400 years ago, that talabul ilmi, that seeking knowledge, is a basic obligation on every male Muslim and every female Muslim. So what is the purpose of knowledge? That the person, the purpose of giving a child learning and schooling is that the child gets a curiosity and thirst for knowledge. And that child who has the thirst of knowledge in their heart, and that child has gotten the successful goal of schooling. The parents' role is simply this, that they should try to create a thirst of knowledge in the child. They should make learning a beloved affair. They should make it an enjoyable task. And the parents should participate in the learning. So therefore, formal education has to take place at home as well. What the mother teaches the child at home is also part of formal education. Don't think it's just to be left to the school, for the teacher to do the schooling. Now, the teacher is just a facilitator in the learning of a child, a motivator in the learning, so that the child is attracted to learning. And you should keep one thing in mind, that the growth of the person's brain is very important, and we must understand how it develops. So for us to reflect, think on one thing, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put a lot of emphasis in our deen on adab towards the teacher. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala made the earth, in 2 days He made the whole physical world, but He put barakah in it for 4 days. So He put resources in it and blessings in it and barakah in it for 4 days. Then Allah Ta'ala sent four Ulul Azam Anbiya, four sacred books of revelation, four major revelations, four major angels, four Khulafa'i Rashidun. Allah has given this ummah four madhahib of fiqh and four silsila of tasawwuf, essentially. And after 4 months, the baby gets the ruh in the womb of the mother. On the day of judgment, there will be four questions without answering that no one will be able to move from their place. Then the prophethood was revealed in 40 years, the first revelation. Sayyidina Musa alayhi salam had to spend 40 days in Mount Tur, also a multiplier of 4. And in the Mashaykh, we also do Jilla of 40 days. And in Tabliki Jamaat also, they have Jilla for 40 days, 4 months. So the count of 4 is a significant number in our deen. And similarly, 7 is a significant number in our deen. 7 samawat, 7 levels of earth, 7 gates of Jahannam, 7 levels of Jannah. And if you look at the rhythm of the moon, the moon has 2 times 17 every 14 days. The moon has a rhythmic cycle. This is called the lunar rhythm. And Sayyidina Yusuf alayhi salam, in his story, that he was imprisoned for 7 years first, and then 7 years there was first the crop was there for 7 years, and then there was famine for 7 years. So there was a cycle of 7 years. So the number 7 also has a lot of importance. And for children, the number 7 is important. From 0 to 7 is the time of the child, which has very little memory, and they're developing their brain and their memory at this time. And from 7 to 14, they start going towards their journey towards their adulthood. And from 14 to 21, they're developing in the prime of their youth. And then from 21 to 28, the growth of their bones stops and stabilizes at that time. Then they keep going 28 to 35, 35 to 42, such that when 7 times this cycle goes to a person which is 49 or 50, then a woman reaches menopause, she's not able to produce eggs anymore, she's no longer fertile. The scientists, they researched that every 7 years, a person's body gets double the chances of cancer. So after the first 7 years, if there's 1 chance of cancer, in the next 7 years it's 2, in the next 7 years it's 4. It'll keep doubling every 7 years the chances of getting cancer. So much so that when 9 times a person completes 7 cycles, means they reach 63, and this becomes a time of memory loss, and a person starts losing their memory gradually. And Allah Ta'ala took Sayyidina Sussam back to him at the age of 63, so that nobody could ever say later that, oh, he reached old age and maybe he had memory loss and he couldn't remember the revelation correctly that he was reciting. So Allah Ta'ala raised the Prophet Sussam back before such an age, so nobody could make any such critique of the Prophet Sussam. And then another cycle of 7 years takes place. Then a person reaches 70 years of age. At the age of 70, that's an average age. The Prophet said, my ummah's average age will be between 60 and 70. So this is cycles of 7 is also a very important thing for us to look in our human development. Especially the first 7 years, they are very critical. and women should be very careful in the first 7 years of their children's development. When a baby is born, their brain grows physically, but there's not maturity. So it's physically growing, but the maturity starts happening after the age of 7. So from birth to 2 years, that period, in that, a brain only has permanent memory. So whatever the child sees and whatever the child hears becomes part of his memory. You can think that if you use the example of a computer, so there are two types of memory in the computer. One is RAM, random access memory, and one is called ROM, read-only memory. So ROM is permanent. And a person's mind in the beginning, from birth to 2 years, only has ROM, only has permanent memory. Whatever comes becomes etched in their memory permanently, whatever information comes. And their information remains in the child their whole life. And this is why they say that when a person is a child, he can even remember those things when he's 55 years old, because they're permanently in his memory. But when he becomes 7, he gets RAM, he gets the short-term memory, temporary memory. And now he has maturity, he has a sense of distinction, he can tell the difference between good and bad. So whatever information comes, he first processes it through his RAM, and then after that decides whether he wants to make it part of his memory or not. So until a child doesn't have this RAM capacity, until then we should not ever let the child be exposed to any incorrect thing. Because the scientists have said that until 2 years you should never put a screen in front of the child. So if a person watches these fighting cartoons or fighting games from 0 to 2 years, or video games, and this will become part of his personality, they become etched in his permanent memory, they become his nature. That's why the father and mother will spend years later trying to remove that character trait from the baby, but they can't. Why won't he listen to you? Because you let him look at those things on the screen. So when rubbish goes in, then rubbish will come out. You let him see all of these awful things, so now he's demonstrating awful behavior. So therefore, to whatever extent possible, until the age, try your best to make sure a child never even sees a screen at all until the age of 2. And it should not be that, oh, the mother is doing work and she just puts things on the screen for the child to watch so that the child gets busy. No. This critical age from 0 to 2, because the child cannot filter anything. Whatever they see, whatever they perceive, all of that becomes permanently etched in their memory. And after that, from 2 to 5 years of age, this is the next stage in which they're starting to develop the filters. In this age, the mother should teach the child personally at home, and she should try to protect them from negative exposure into society. When he goes to school, he may see other children, and the other children may say curse words or have bad antics, or they may have been grown up on TV, so they may be acting like dancing or acting like TV characters. So he will see that and come home and start imitating that. So therefore, scientists feel from their research that what is the true best age for a child to begin formal schooling? So they say from anywhere from 5 to 7 years of age, now they have enough filters that they can assess what is being taught to them, and they can interact with other children without those children necessarily affecting them. In Germany, there were 3,000 children who were experimented upon. and different children were, several thousand were started education at 5, and several thousand started their education at 7. So they compared when they reached age of 20, and they saw that those who started school at 5 were left behind, and those who started school later at 7 were performing better at age 20. So science has researched that the best time to start education is at the age of 7 years. Anyway, if you want to start at age of 5, that is okay. But there's another problem, that is schools have this fashion of early learning, and parents think that we should just take them to the school as early as possible. And education institutions, for the sake of getting more money, they caught on to this. And now they have all types of early childhood education schemes. And now they're taking early admissions and pre-nursery and pre-pre-nursery. And before they would admit at 5 or 7, now they're admitting at 3, some are admitting at 2. Even Sheikh said, I was stunned once. And in our country, there was one school that opened, English medium school, that they say, we're ready, you write your child's name in admission even before the child is born. We're willing to take admissions before birth. Why? Because after birth, there's a long line for admission. So they're going so early into admission. If you start the child early, it's premature. Why? Because you're placing a stress on him that he's not capable of handling. So that retards and slows the development of his brain. So you're putting a 3-year-old in winter and sending him to school, and he's crying, I don't want to go to school. But you're pushing him, you must go to school. And we think we're doing the right thing by sending the child to school. But the signal that the child is getting in brain is the school is extremely stressful, is extremely tense thing for me to do, and this has long-term negative consequences on him. So therefore, wait at least to the age of 5, sometimes to the age of 7, before you challenge him to school. And even as I said, that we weren't sent to school until that age, and the women would tell my mom that, oh, your child is so old, you don't send him to school. And my mom would say, I'll do it later. And as he says, that I started school when I was 6 and a half years old. And I already knew what was right and wrong, and I could recognize things, so I was not affected by anything that any child did. So either way, from birth to no screen and no exposure to external environment. That was from 0 to 2. From 2 to 5, controlled exposure, limited exposure to the environment. Mother should try as much as possible to learn that this is the time of informal education, that the child learns in the lap of his mother. And make him memorize last juz of Quran, make him memorize dua, stimulate the mind with learning, but keep it more closely with your own people. Don't let him go to any school and expose him to anyone. So the mother should be very watchful. From 5 to 7 years of age is the next stage. This is now, at any point, you can now enroll your child in an institution for formal schooling and learned education. But the mother still has a responsibility, and that is that whenever the child comes back from school, she should screen the child, because the child themselves may not 100% have the filters developed. So she had to ask him, what happened today? What happened in break? What did you do with your friends in playtime? What did your teacher say? What did your classmates talk to you about today? In the beginning, the child will share everything. He will say every single thing that every classmate said to him. And then the mother should, if anything was inappropriate, she should guide the child out from that. That way then, the child will be protected from this exposure, if there is any negative aspect of the exposure. This covers the first 7 years that are critical for a child's development. Now we should also keep another thing in mind, and that when they're born with some shortcoming, so for example they had low birth weight when they were born, or they were a premature baby, they were born before 32 weeks. So for such a child, in their brain, there's also low brain development. So the scientists have said that in this case then, the mother, for the first 7 years, if she gives very good informal education at home, she can make up that deficiency that the premature baby has or baby with low birth weight has. But mothers don't know this, that the importance of informal education is so much that it has such a rectifying power. A few days ago, in the University of Warwick in the UK, there was a research program that studied the child from birth to the age of 13. And for 13 years they watched their children. And after the study, they came to the conclusion that the parenting style of the parent makes a great difference. And if the parents were good parents, even if they were born with a bit slow, by the age of 13, they caught up with everyone else, and they were equally performing with the other children. So this is what our mashayikh used to say, that the lap of the child is the lap of the mother is the first mother's son, and all of science is simply coming to the same conclusion, that the lap of the mother is the first mother's son. In our homes, many women now have only give a little importance to the informal education that takes place at home. They don't appreciate its real importance. So therefore, that is why today we want to stress the importance of informal education at home. In childhood, you should start learning from a very young age. For example, when the child can even sit up, baby, and he can hear, so at that point the mother should start reading small, very simple books, because the child is listening, and he will start loving the book as an object, and he will have an attachment for books. If the baby sees the mother liking the books, remember, it's going in his permanent memory because it's before 2 years old, and he's thinking this is a good thing to have a book in your hand and a good thing to read books. So then the child will get a love for learning for his whole life, and this all life he will have love for book learning. In Harvard, they did a 13-year study, and after the 13 years of research, they came to the conclusion that family informal education is better in childhood than the formal schooling education. So rather than relying entirely on the teacher in the school, in the early years, what the mother teaches the children at home, that is better. Mother should try that every day she should recite some, read out from a book, or show some pictures of objects and say their name, or show ABC, or show pictures of fruits and tell them the names of the fruits. And whatever the child is told, if the child can, when later when the child learns to speak, so ask him some questions. That, oh, you read this morning, what is this? And point to the fruit and make the child say the name. Then you will get some feedback as to whether the child is learning or not. And you should put the book sometimes in the hand of the child and even ask the child to turn the page, so the child feels that they're involved in that learning process. And you should take a few books with you. Whenever you go out of the house, you should keep teaching. So if you're going to the store, show him the names of different stores. That, for example, this is bakery, this is grocery supermarket, this is this. Or if there's signs on the road, read it out to them. That speed limit, this says stop. Whatever the child is seeing, you should teach him what it is that he's looking at, so he can benefit more from that visual experience when he leaves the home. We should keep one thing in mind, that whenever a child grows older, then he should read, but there should be a difference, and that then whatever book you give him, the child, to read, you should read it yourself, screen it yourself, because in some books they've inserted poisonous material. Even at the early education, they have start talking about love stories and talking about romance, where a child starts thinking in a different direction. So the mother must do screening. Every mother must read the book herself first and then give it to the children. And she should spend still 15 to 20 minutes time daily reading with them. And the best time for reading is bedtime before sleep. At that time she should read out to the child, make the child interested and attracted in reading, and the child will listen and understand well. And they shouldn't just read in a monotonous way, but they should pause in the middle, tell a little story, make the child laugh, tell them a small joke, make it a fun and lively, engaging experience so that the child loves that bedtime reading time. Then there's children in some subjects that you have to teach them a bit more technically, such as language. So if you want to teach a child language, you should know that that is a bit more technical. So there's some things you should know. That until the three, by the time they hit three, they can develop a vocabulary of 3,000 words. And there was a research study conducted at Harvard, which they spent many years looking at this language study, and then they came to the conclusion that whatever words the parents teach the children, the child will learn those words from the mother the most. So the mother should be the language instructor of the child at the early age. So for example, if you take your children to the grocery store, everything you're doing, talk to them. This bread has carbohydrates. Just keep talking, and you would be amazed how quickly the children remember these words. This is chicken, that's the poultry section, this is the dairy section, this is... So, wherever you are, whatever aisle you're in, you should tell the child the most information you can and just keep repeating that information every time you go. And the child will learn these words and learn the meanings of the words. And then give him a chance to speak also. It shouldn't be that you do all the talking. And if he says something, he mispronounces some word or says something grammatically incorrect, so don't sternly reprimand him, just let him keep talking. You don't have to correct him every time. Later on, he will be able to fix his accent or fix his pronunciation. And it has been mentioned that in the beginning, children should learn one language, and then they will pick up that language quickly. And if you expose them very early to two languages, then their speaking ability is a bit retarded. It's a bit slowed down. But when the child becomes three, then after the age of three, they can process three languages simultaneously. So in your case, Gujarati, Urdu, and English. The research has established, research has shown that we are creative thinkers. Those who are bilingual, who know more than one language, are more creative in their thinking. So this is a principle that whatever language you want to that child to learn, you should surround the baby in that language. You should speak that language, ask the baby, prompt the baby to speak that language. People nearby should speak that language. This is called language immersion program. So when you raise the child in an environment where all around them that language is being spoken, then that child will be able to learn that language easily. And it has been established through science that a two-year-old child can pick up speech patterns from two onwards. So even after age of two, you can teach them qiraat of Quran because they can pick up speech pattern. And in the Western countries, when children have a melodious voice, at the age of three, they start training them to be a singer. And they have special programs to train the young singers. So for the children, you need to give them a learning environment at home. That's very essential. And the children will even learn from the discussion of people. Then one time, you can teach him two languages after 3 years. If you tell him that, look, in Urdu the word is acha, and for that the English word is good. So when you start telling them the two words in the same language for the same meaning, then they will start understanding that for one meaning there can be two words. And then when you tell him something when they grow older, then the child, and don't worry about the accent in the beginning, when you tell them later,
do you know the letter sound? They will help you learn to read.
So you using phonics and phonetics, that so use the letter sounds, and that will help you to read. So when you want to teach them apple, you say ah. So, and even there are computer programs that you can, computer will explain this. But because they don't learn from books anymore, instead of A is Apple phone, B for Bluetooth, C for chatting, D for download, E is email, F is for Facebook, G is for Google, X is how it is, I is friends.
Q is a QuickTime, R is a RAM, S is Skype, or T is a touchscreen, U is a USB, V is a Vista, W is a Wi-Fi, or X is XP, or Y is a YouTube, or Z is a Zemnet. Zemnet ka zamana hai. Hum baat aur kar rahe hote hain.
So unless you yourself train the children in the vocabulary, then they'll just pick up whatever vocabulary is around them. So once a teacher was trying to teach his students that there's an ostrich, which is a very strong bird, and they can digest food. And so when the child heard the specification, he started telling his classmate that, oh, this sounds like the perfect husband, that he's big and strong and he can digest any food you give him. This would be the best husband to have. So the teacher was teaching for a different reason, and the girls in the class were understanding with a different perspective. Once a teacher told the children a sentence, complete the sentence. So what was the sentence? Early to bed, early to rise. So the child completed the sentence.
This man has no interest in his wife. Jab internet padhate ho, period war college mein, pucha kyun na ho taleem ka mayar college mein, agar ke dusre mashroob bhi mehenge nahi milte, magar chalta hai aksar sharbat-e-deedar college mein. वो डिग्री की बजाय मेन लेकर लौट आया है मिला था दाखला जिसको समुंदर पार कॉलेज में
That your children today are glued to the internet and they go to college, and instead of getting the degree of learning, they got the degree of so many beautiful women's images etched in their mind, and they came back from across the ocean, means across the Atlantic, with, instead of learning, they came back with all types of fantasizing. That was the Urdu poem that somebody wrote in response to Western civilization. Next point is that mathematic learning. So first point was language learning, next is mathematic learning. So you will find that math is a part of your everyday life. So always say these things, how much, how many, how big, explain to them that it's 5 centimeters big, so they understand things are measured mathematically, whether it's numbers or whether it's weight or whether it's size or whatever it is. Throughout the day with your child, start introducing to them mathematical concepts, and you will find so many opportunities to do that in everyday life. And the toys also, just there are so many toys which will teach your child counting, measurement, comparing large, small shapes. So these are called edutainment, educational toys. Education through entertainment. Where the child is playing, but the child is also learning. And then when you are going to lay out the food to eat, at that time is also something to teach the child mathematically. So tell him, as keep him with you and say, okay, look, 1 knife and 2 forks, and there's 6 spoons and 10 plates. I want you to put them there. And now the child will have to go and count and get these things. Okay, count the stairs. How many stairs are we going to count? There's so many things you can unravel. How many guests came today? Count the number of guests in the room. So 10 shapes like triangle, circle, square. The child can very easily recognize these shapes because there's so many such shaped objects in our home. And when women, they cook in the kitchen, now cooking is even a mathematical and scientific activity. That's why in France, the people keep the children with them in cooking. And they're very fond of cooking, and they involve the children in the cooking. And the child learns math and science in the kitchen. For example, measure me 1/4 cup of this, or give me 1 spoon of this. Okay, now we're going to mix these ingredients together, or take this out from the fridge. So all of this is like a lab. The kitchen is like a lab for a child. And measurement, counting, mixing, all of these things will happen in the kitchen. And some women spend so much time in the kitchen, their address is the kitchen. In math, where should you start? So listen to that. That one is that the mother can teach mathematics in this way, in everyday stuff. And then if she wants to go to a next level, there is a program called RAS Kids. And in that, children through playing, they learn play-based mathematics. And then this is something the child can do on their own without the mother having to do it for them. And if they have more interest or you want to get them to go even further in mathematics, there's a Pakistani boy who developed something called Khan Academy. And he started making notes in mathematics and made videos to explain mathematical concepts to his nephew or cousin. And it became a world famous program, and you can see all these videos on YouTube. And the name is khanacademy.org. And if you want to go even more than this, then there's a Japanese program, Brain to Brain. And this is for advanced learning and skill development. And it is very beneficial. But the children has to be above 5 and between 5 and 15 years of age. And in this, there's whole brain development. And they can also use the abacus. So the child's whole gets the whole mathematical learning that will benefit them their whole life. And if you want to give an even greater level of math, that is called Kumon. It's when the Japanese scientist made this in 1954. They started it here in Lusaka to train children in developing countries' mathematical skills. And then it was further developed in America. And subtraction, division, multiplication, addition, all of those things, all the way up to calculus. Even a young boy can even solve mathematical problems in calculus. So this is also a very well-designed program. So mothers should make use of these things. And when they're sitting with the child, she should even teach them how to count on the finger, teach them to count with cards. This is interactive activities. So then the children will count even on the thirds of the fingers, and they will understand how to count through this way. In mathematics, you should teach the children the concept. You shouldn't make them just memorize. They should be understanding of concepts, not just memorizing of terms. When the child has memorized something, when the child has understood properly, then teach them the next lesson. Don't just base progress on the next lesson that they've memorized it. So ask them how many frames, how many bulbs are there on the wall. So by asking the child this, then the child is enjoying the time spent with the mother, and time also passes well, and the child also learns mathematics. When the child responds to some question that you ask, give him some reward. And you can give reward, again, can just be by looking with kindness and affection, give them a glance of love or a smile, or giving a kiss. All of these are also rewards. It doesn't mean necessarily it has to be money or candy. Even just any gesture of appreciation, that is a prize and reward for the child. And you should have the child study at a normal pace. You shouldn't speed it up so much that the child feels it as a burden. And you should be steady in the teaching. And when you're traveling, even though you're traveling, even then take time out, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and do some reading with your child. So that there's consistency and constancy in the child's learning. If you're out, then while you're out, keep learning. Okay, look at the price tag of that item and tell me what it is. Oh, what does it say on the taxi cab's meter? Oh, what was the price of this ticket for your ride? Keep asking them questions, keep them involved, and that will give them activity. And that will give them the importance of mathematics. Then the next thing is religious learning. So language, mathematics, third is religious learning. One way to get mastery of religious learning is to teach the children Fazail-e-Amal and Hikayat-us-Sahaba. These two books are extremely beneficial in learning for the children. Maybe there is no other books that are so beneficial for children. That these mothers should tell the children the stories of Sahaba and the stories that are in these two books. And when they get the stories, when they get the Fazail, they will have motivation, and then when they get stories, they will see how real life people used to do these things. And after that, then tell them the stories of the prophets, Qasas al-Nabiyin, the story of Musa al-Islam, the story of Yusuf al-Islam. Then when they go further, then tell them the stories of the words, the teachings of the awliya, teach them naat and poetries about the Prophet. Then when they're 70, teach them how to pray also. So when you want to go further in dini ilm, then the South African ulama have made a series of books called Tasheel series. So on Aqaid, on Adab, on history, on fiqh, on hadith, on Quran. And the mother should teach the children these books. And especially if you live in America and Europe where there are not so many ulama, then what we've seen is normally that there's a Sunday school. In Sunday school, you should teach these things in Sunday school. And in the world, in every country where there is a maktab system, we have found that this has been the most beneficial system of learning. May Allah Ta'ala give tremendous reward to those ulama who launched the maktab system. And even in Europe and America, wherever you go, maktab means after school Islamic learning. So the children learn their dini basics and essentials. And if you want to go even more dini learning, then you have to send your child to an alim of deen. Send him to a jamia, a darul ulum, where he will formally learn the Islamic learning. He will memorize Quran, learn tafsir, and learn the Islamic disciplines of learning. And this is the ultimate extreme of Islamic knowledge. Now, different countries, there are some countries which don't even have such institutions of learning. So then if your child is old enough, then even there are some online learning possibilities. So there are many programs where teach with the right ulama, like Al-Mu'allim, Ilm Essentials, they teach the knowledge to the children. This is also one possible way. And the next is technology as a learning tool. So we are living in an age of technology. And in this day and age, we cannot keep the children away from technology. And when the child grows older, he will run. It's like he's running out of jail. He will be so excited to enter into society. So if you don't train the child in the good use of technology, they will end up in the bad use of technology. So first, keep them away from video games from the young age, because remember, they don't have the filter. But after age of 3, then you have to tell your children. Then if the child is going to play some game on the screen, then it will build their hand-eye coordination. Then, when the child gets a bit older, there should be certain computer programs that the child should learn. So first teach them how to type, then teach them how to use Windows and the office programs. Excel and other such programs, then you should even teach the child programming, app development, website design, even go teach him robotic designing. And we have seen that that child who goes in design, they stay away from the dirty websites because all their time is designing and they can spend hours making designs. So this is one way also that when your child is inevitably going to end up on the screen, in advance you give them attracted to things that are halal. And then he's just always designing and programming all the time, then he doesn't interested in going to the improper websites. The next point is the tarbiyah, moral and spiritual learning, character building. So this is when the child gets a little bit old, you have to share the control and decision making with the child. For example, would you like to do this? Or would you like to walk or would you like to run? Do you want to sit on the right side? Would you like to sit on the left side? Do you want to go home now or would you like to go home 10 minutes later? So try to keep giving the children choices. When you give choices, then there are two benefits. First is if they take the decision on their own, then they're content. They're happy with doing that action that they decided on their own. Second is now they will get the power of assessing different things, benefits and advantages of different decisions, and that will increase their decision making power, that will grant them wisdom, that will give them a sense of responsibility. And the strange thing is that this is a very small thing, but there's so many attributes that will be placed in that child when you give them a choice. But many mothers, they neglect it and they think that there's no need to tell them, he's just a little kid, he's a robot, whatever I say is going to do it. No, he's a human being. And if you incorporate him and give him a choice, then you will see that when he chooses, he's part of the decision, then he won't disturb you, he won't misbehave. Even a 9 months, a 9 months old baby is more intelligent than any computer in the world. The brain of a 9 month is better than every single microprocessor chip in the world. That is the power of the human brain. It is developed even already at that level at 9 months old. So that means the child's intelligence has to be used. You have to use that brain. And you should teach the child with love. You can't teach him through just words, you have to teach through love and affection and action. And always remember that those children don't love those. Children don't love the parents who disregard them and ignore them. And then when they grow up, they will even hate their parents. And we've seen in our homes that we would say that, oh, I was at home and I was misbehaving and my mother couldn't even care. So don't congratulate yourself that, oh, I believe in freedom, giving my children freedom. You're not giving them freedom, you're ignoring them. And what you'd like to call freedom to make yourself feel good, the child will say that my child will feel that I've been neglected, I've been ignored. So you have to be involved, you have to give the child love and affection. Yes, obviously there is a limit. You don't want to spoil the child. Now science has established that those children love those parents more whose parents give them love and also set some guidelines for them strictly. So not just unconditional love, but also some guidelines. And you will see in any place in the world, whether it's education, whether it's office, whether it's work, you will find that every single place, the father and the mother and the teacher or coach always had a best effect if he was loving but also very disciplined. So love and discipline, these two things when they're combined, they bring perfection in the development of the child. So be strict on the guidelines. So the child should know that yes, these are certain limits. I can't cross these limits. This is what my mom has told me that I can't do. And one last thing for today is that we should don't need to tell the child what good behavior is. We need to show the child what good behavior is. But there's a big difference. Listen to it again, that it's not necessary to tell the child what is good behavior and character. We must show and demonstrate and educate what is good behavior and characteristic. Then the child will absorb it and adopt it and imitate it themselves. One person said such a wonderful thing. Religion must not only be taught, it must be caught. So don't merely teach it through words, but live it in your life so the child captures that life that you live in front of them. And Shaykh is saying that when I was a child, I first learned the Sawf and Saluk from our teacher of Persian, who taught me the Panjnama. And this is a book by a big Wali of Allah Ta'ala, who wrote Tazkiratul Awliya. And he also wrote this book called Panjnama, Khwaja Fariduddin Attar Rahmatullah. And so my teacher told me as a child that the big Wali of Allah has written this, and it has stories of awliya. So Shaykh said, I used to hear stories of awliya from my parents, so I was very interested in this book. And when I read this book when I was small, I still to this day feel that all of the Sawf was contained in that. And in my whole life, I've just read the tafsir of the Panjnama after that. Then I saw their living example of this in my mashayikh and the awliya that I met. So I'll give you some examples so you can understand clearly what I'm saying. And many times I learned many things from my mother, and from that there are three things in particular. Number one was that she was so uninterested in the world. She had no love attachment for the world. So when I graduated from university as electrical engineer, I went to the was working in the factory, the sugar mill, and I started getting a great salary. My mother, in her whole life, she never ever even talked about money. She never even asked me for money. She never even inquired about my salary. Now, think that any other woman from a small place like Jhang, that you go to the big city, get a degree, get a big job, the mother would always ask you about your earning and money. But my mother was never ever interested. Then I would try to offer my mother money. My mom would say, I don't need this. I'm living my life finely up till now, and I will continue like this. Then this attribute of my mother took out all interest in the world from my heart, that I cannot tell you. This is something I learned from my mother. Otherwise, mother tells their children that, oh, you have good so much salary, you should give this much to this family member, which is good, but give this much here. They're interested in the earning and distribution of earnings. But my mom wasn't interested in it at all. Second thing that I learned from her is how to host a guest. That she was such a gracious host to her guests that I used to be amazed. That guest used to come unannounced, and whatever she had made for us, she would feed it to all of the guests. Feed all of it to the guests. And she would look at us and say, don't you utter a word that you're hungry or that's our food. And we would be sitting there absolutely quiet. And then after they left, she would make food again, and then we would eat late night. And I still remember that once when I was maybe 2.5, 3 years of age, I have an older sister, and she's 2, 3 years older than me. She must have been 4 or 5. It was a winter night, and all of a sudden, some of the people that we knew from the rural village, one of them came to our home. One of them had had a heart attack, and they had brought a lot of people to the city to take the patient to the hospital. And there were about 25 to 30 people, men, women, all worried about that relative, and they came to the door. And my elder brother came out, and he saw that, oh, these are the people we know. They're 25 to 30 guests. Now, in every house, you don't have enough space to put bedding for 25-30 people. At that time, my mother, she tried to set different beds in all types of different places in the home, different rooms, and she even gave all of our blankets and bedding and pillows to the guests. And my older sister, my mom had prepared some new blankets for her wedding. She unpacked that and she laid it on the ground for the guests to sleep on. So we were amazed that this is the same thing my mom had been buying so carefully and wrapping so carefully for my eldest sister's marriage. She's just opening it and laying it out for the guests. And my mom was just running around the house trying to find more and more spaces for more and more beds. And every single blanket, pillow, sheet, bedding, she gave it and she put those 25 to sleep. Then me and my sister, we were just sitting there watching all this, and we were cold because it was the winter. And she said that, "Oh, my children, now you lie." And we lay down and there was some sack of wheat. So what my mom did is she took that sack of wheat and she put us like in a haystack. So we spent that whole winter night inside the jute bag of the sack of wheat. But my mom taught me a lesson that night that how you should be a host to the guest. The third thing I learned from my mom was to hide your good deeds. But whatever money my mother used to get, which was extra beyond her basic needs, she would immediately give it to a needy person. And we would never even know who she gives it to. But when she passed away, there are two incidents that came to light by which I learned I was amazed at how much she was helping people and how much she concealed it. First incident is that one week after she passed away, when a woman, she came and she started crying so much in front of my sister. And then she gave her story that, you know, once I came to your mother and asked her to make dua for me, that my husband doesn't give me any money, he's in his own world and he neglects us entirely. And your mom, she made dua for me. And then afterwards, every month, she started sending me some money secretly. And she told me that you are like a daughter to me, and mothers give money to their daughters. I tried to return it, and she said that you're like a daughter to me. Mothers give daughters. Don't say anything, just accept it quietly. So your mom every month used to send me some sadaqa, due to which I was able to run the pocket money of the house. He said that once I got stuck in something that I couldn't come to see your mom on my regular visit. And because we live a bit far away, your mom never came to visit me. But then what happened? I sent my sister to your mom to make dua for me. So when my sister went and your mom made dua, and your mom gave my sister money and said, "Look, I was going to give your sister this money. Please apologize that I couldn't come to her myself." And the sister gave me, and then she told me that this is some money that she says she owes you. She made it sound like it's a loan. So she gave it to me, and I started thinking, what loan did I ever give her? And how does she owe me money? And I said, okay, next time I'll ask her. So next time I went to her, that, "Oh, my mother, that I didn't. Oh, you didn't owe me any money, I never gave you a loan." And she said, "Look, that was your sister. If I told your sister that I give your sister money every month, so then your secret would be revealed that your husband mistreats you. So I wanted to conceal your secret. So I told her that it's like a debt upon me that I have to owe you. And it was because I hadn't been able to see you. We missed that regular meeting, so it was something I owed you." So she concealed it so much that neither our family knew nor her family knew. So this woman came, she was crying so much. Then second person came and said that when my mother was ill, then it was difficult for her to walk and she would get asthma. So my mother used to take the name of one woman in the neighborhood. That so many days have passed and I don't know how she is. How is she doing? And she would ask Hazrat Ji, that I said, "No, I don't know who that woman is. I've never met her." And then once Hazrat Ji was in the path and he ended up encountering that woman. He said, "Oh, my mother remembers you and she's always asking about you." And she said, "Oh, that we were living near you in rent and now we've moved to a different neighborhood." So Hazrat Ji came back home and he told his mom that she used to live in this area but she's now moved. "Tell me, is there something you need me to do for her? You want me to give her?" And the mother said, "No, I want to meet her myself." So then the next day, Hazrat's mother said, take me to where she is. Now listen that she was so old, and I told you that when she was walking, she would get shortness of breath. Now she wants to go to the next neighborhood and meet this woman. So I took her, and she had to lean on my shoulder, and three times we had to stop on the way, and she had to sit and rest because she couldn't continue walking. After that, then she reached this person's house, and she went in and came out within 1 minute, and somehow she must have given her money. I thought she just asked her, how are you, and came back out. When my mother passed away, that woman came to me and said that your mother, when she came to meet me that day, she secretly gave me some money. And Azuji said, I had a sister, my mom could have sent my sister with the money, but she wanted to hide this fact, and she wanted to get the reward only from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is something a person learns from their mother and father. So women, if you want to train your children, you have to practically become like this. And you have to demonstrate real life to your children so that it becomes part of their permanent memory. So that when your child grows up, he becomes like the next Imam Ghazali. He becomes the living embodiment of Rumi and Ghazali. May Allah Ta'ala accept each and every one of us to give the best of training and education to our children.